Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's Thursday, January the 12th, and live from Bonn, Germany, this is Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
And I'm your co-host, Wanjiku Mwaura, with what's trending on social media.
Coming up on the program, Somalia's newly installed parliament begins the long and bitter process of electing a new president and prime minister.
Certainly this electoral process has been hampered and the credibility and the legitimacy of it is very much damaged. We've seen the majority now of Somalia's lower house of parliament sworn in.
And what's behind the recent row between Nigeria and Taiwan? We hear from Taiwanese Foreign Minister Eleanor Wong.
According to the statement from the so-called joint news conference, Nigeria requests our business delegation to move from the capital city of Abuja to their biggest city, Lagos.
We'll also be getting your comments on Donald Trump after his press conference yesterday.
We'll be back with these stories and more, but first, a brief look at what's happening around the world.
I'm Brandon Conradis with DW News. Belgium has charged two people in connection with the terror attacks that occurred in Paris and Brussels. Police arrested the man and woman on Thursday during a raid of their home in the Belgian capital. Authorities allege the suspects provided false documents used by Khalid al-Bakrawi, the man believed to have been one of the masterminds behind the Paris attack. Al-Bakrawi later blew himself up in an attack on the Brussels metro in March 2016. Police said the man remains in custody, but the woman has been released under strict conditions. Top leaders flew to Geneva on Thursday as talks aiming to reunify the divided island of Cyprus entered a critical stage. The UN-mediated talks come several days after Turkish and Greek Cypriot leaders met to discuss key aspects of the reunification deal. The island has been divided since 1974 after Turkish soldiers intervened to stop an Athens-backed coup attempting to unify the island with Greece. Foreign ministers from the guarantor powers of Great Britain, Turkey, and Greece took part in what some say may be the last chance to end the conflict. German professor Hubert Faussmann, however, expressed skepticism that a deal could be reached.
The big issue of the external powers, in particular the role of Turkey, is another big concern, and those more pessimistic are wondering what President Tayyip Erdogan really wants. If he wants a solution and if he will make the Turkish concessions necessary to reach a deal, or this will not happen. And this is really the crucial question, or one of the crucial questions, the talks currently will boil down to.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Germany has logged its strongest economic growth in 5 years. The country's Federal Statistics Office said on Thursday that gross domestic product grew by 1.9% in 2016, thanks largely to a spike in private consumption. However, DW financial correspondent Ulrich Bartz said 2017 might prove to be a bumpy ride for Europe's largest economy.
The worries are there that 2017 will be a difficult year, and people are a little bit shocked after 2016. The stock market year was very volatile because the political situation was very volatile. And if anything, 2017 looks to be perhaps politically even more volatile, not least because of Donald Trump taking office next week and the Brexit developing further in which direction, no one knows. But there will also be elections in Europe here.
The leader of the EU's rotating presidency has called for fresh talks between Brussels and Libya in order to avert another migrant crisis in the coming months. Maltese Prime Minister Joseph Muscat warned on Thursday that Europe risked an unprecedented flow of migrants from North Africa in the spring. He said that the EU, which launched the naval Operation Sophia in 2015, needed to start sending ships into Libya's territorial waters. Prosecutors on Thursday questioned the chairman of tech giant Samsung over his alleged business dealings with embattled South Korean President Park Geun-hye. Lee Jae-yong arrived at the special prosecutor's office in Seoul to address accusations that his company had paid expensive bribes to curry favor with the government. Park has denied any wrongdoing. The country's parliament voted in December to impeach her, and the Constitutional Court has 6 months to either uphold the decision or reinstate her. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Brandon Conradis.
Now, in a moment on social media, we will be discussing the reasons behind US President-elect Donald Trump's war on critical media. But first, Somalia's newly installed parliament has voted for a new House Speaker based on the country's clan-based politics. Now, former Speaker Mohamed Usman Jawari has been re-elected after he won about 141 votes from the 259 MPs. Somalia's parliament is made up of representatives from different clans who also vote for prime minister and a president. But Somalia has been facing much difficulties in putting its house into order. To talk about this, Ahmed Soliman from the UK think tank Chatham House joins me from the on the line from London.
I think we've seen several delays in this election, and many of those have been without explanation. And certainly this electoral process has been hampered, and the credibility and the legitimacy of it is very much damaged. We've seen the majority now of Somalia's lower house of parliament sworn in, and those MPs re-elected the speaker who was previously speaker, Mohamed Jawari, and he comfortably won with 141 of about 260 MPs voting for him. And his record has been one of stability and consistency, having led Parliament through very, very turbulent times over the last Parliament, including having seen the ousting of two prime ministers in 2 years.
There is obviously a question of universal adult suffrage here. And we've also seen some other presidential candidates have come out and say that the whole system is not made up to be free and fair.
I think there is truth to that, very much there is truth to that. I mean, we are, as you rightly point out, not in a position where Somalia can have one person, one vote elections, and that is something that is a goal in the future. It was a goal coming into this election, and now it is a goal for the next election. Whether or not the conditions will be right in 2020, you know, remain to be seen. But really, Somalia hasn't been in a place, hasn't been able to make the gains necessary in terms of, you know, adoption of its constitution, putting the conditions in place for universal suffrage.
We obviously should not undermine the progress that's been made in Somalia. But how long is this going to keep going on for? When would ordinary Somalis have that possibility of being able to vote for their own president rather than representatives from the different clans?
Well, it's very difficult for me to be able to answer that question. And honestly, I couldn't put a timeline on when that is likely to be possible. You know, I think what we have seen during these elections is an expansion of them. On the positive side, the participation, the coverage, oversight, and scrutiny of these elections has been incomparable to the last elections and to that one previously. I mean, we shouldn't underestimate the fact that the 2009 elections were held in Djibouti, so they weren't even held in Somalia. And last time round, the lower house was selected only in Mogadishu.
Ahmed Soliman, a Somali expert at Chatham House in the UK, talking about the recent elections in Somalia. Wanjiku, any responses on that?
Yes, indeed. We have a comment from Abdirahman Abdishakur, who says, I congratulate the newly elected Speaker of the 10th Parliament of the Federal Republic of Somalia. Sharmake Farah also says, congratulations to all MPs who have made possible for this historic moment and elected Mohamed Osman Jawar as the Speaker of Somalia.
Thank you very much for that. We keep going. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson has joined diplomats from Cyprus representing both sides of a political divide to find solutions to their long-standing conflict. Former colonial power Britain still retained a vast territory in Cyprus, and the rest of the island nation is still divided between Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots. Now, the new Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, reopened the negotiations in Geneva today. Zipporah Nyambura has more.
The dispute dates back to 1974 when Turkey invaded and took over the northern part of Cyprus. Since then, Cyprus has been divided with the Turkish Cypriots in its north and Greek Cypriots in the south. The leaders of the two territories have been in Geneva for 4 days trying to reach a deal that will see the country united again under a two-state federation. The Turkish Cypriot President Mustafa Akinci says he enjoys a good relationship with his counterpart, the president of the Greek Cypriot, which is key to resolving the dispute.
We belong to the same generation, and we are aware of the fact that perhaps this is the last trial of our generation, and perhaps it is the last trial of a federation. Perhaps the younger generations would opt for other kinds of solutions. Therefore, we need not to miss this opportunity.
The talks entered the crucial stage with defining borderlines and security high on the agenda. Both sides have, for the first time, submitted proposals on how to define the boundaries. The UN envoy for Cyprus, Espen Barth, earlier on said that progress has been made on a number of fronts, but that work remained.
The maps that will be presented to between the sides today are maps that they have developed based on their conversations in Montpellier and after. So this is very important because, please understand this, for one side, a big part of the historical trauma that led to, you know, that people have been living with for generations is the loss of land where people used to live, emotional trauma for many people. Whatever outcome, it's historic, because it's the first time in this process that the guarantor powers have actually met.
The foreign ministers of Britain, Greece and Turkey also had a meeting to thrash out a security deal for a reunited Cyprus. The three countries are the so-called guarantor powers of Cyprus' 1960 independence. Britain, the former colonial power in Cyprus, has offered to relinquish about 50% of territory it still retains on the island, known as sovereign base areas. Failure to reach agreement on territorial boundaries and population transfers in an early round of talks in November sent the two sides back to the drawing board.
And that was Zipporah Nyambura reporting there on the efforts to end the division in Cyprus. Taiwan has objected to a request by Nigeria to move its office from the capital Abuja to its previous location in Lagos. Like many other nations, Nigeria does not recognize Taiwan as a sovereign state, but it runs an office in Taiwan's capital, Taipei. Likewise, Taipei has been running a so-called business office in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Why is Nigeria taking a step back now? Isaac Mugabe has more.
Taiwan's Foreign Minister Elena Wang has asked Abuja to reconsider the issue as both sides have an understanding under which Nigeria runs a trade office in Taiwan's capital, Taipei.
According to the statement from the so-called joint news conference, Nigeria requests our business delegation to move from the capital city of Abuja to their biggest city, Lagos. Given the two countries have already signed a memorandum of representative office establishment, Nigeria has also a business office in Taipei, so we hope Nigeria and ourselves can leave room for further discussion based on the policies of mutual benefits and equality.
Local media reports quoted Nigeria's Foreign Minister Geoffrey Onyema saying Taiwan's office will be moving to Lagos, functioning as a trade mission with a skeletal staff. He also added that the Chinese government does not oppose trading with Taiwan as long as there is no formal contact with the government that will suggest recognition of Taiwan as a sovereign country.
Isaac Mugabe reporting on the row between Taiwan and Nigeria over a so-called business office. Wanjiku, any responses there?
Yes, indeed, we have several. Mr. Stanley Nwabia says, Nigeria was in good terms with Taiwan when Goodluck Jonathan secured juicy infrastructural deals with China. How low has Buhari sunk Nigeria? It is shameful. Mai Gida says, Nigeria is toasting to China, and China says, if you want this relationship, stop all interaction with Taiwan. Nigeria obliges and kicks Taiwan out. We also have another comment coming in from Isaac Ehosa, who says, I hope the Nigerian government has thoroughly thought through this.
Thank you very much, there. And do we have any more comments there?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. After yesterday's President-elect Donald Trump held a press conference, some comments that came in. Katerina Moginaki says, I'm not a Donald fan, but let's be honest, people. He said what needed to be said. Chris Malyongovi also says the media should be reasonable. Why can't they write a balanced piece? When the media failed to bring down Trump, then they walked away sulking and plotting on how they will fail again.
Quite interesting there. Is there any sort of mentioning, talking about the responses there, basically why he's using Twitter instead of because of the critical media?
Yes, indeed. He's scared of fake news.
All right. Thank you very much for that. And more to come. You are listening to DW's Africa Link from Bonn in Germany with me, Abubakar Jalo.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
And coming up in the next 15 minutes. The 2017 Africa Cup of Nations is getting underway in Gabon.
Nigerian musician sparks uproar on social media after tweeting about Ghana.
All right. In no less than 48 hours, you and I, that implies if you as mad as about football as I am, we'll be glued to our television screens to watch the opening of the 2017 tournament of the Africa Cup of Nations. But before that, businesses in Gabon are expecting an increase in sales as the economy of the Central African nation that is heavily dependent on petroleum saw a sharp decline due to the fall of crude oil prices. Now, Moki Kinseka reports from Oyem, a town in northern Gabon that will be hosting Group C matches.
Engine source of Gabon Forestier, a logging company based here in Oyem, sound again after 24 hours of a strike action organized by the staff to allow them watch AFCON matches. Nimpa Aristide, deputy director of the enterprise, says the staff agreed to go back to work after intensive negotiations.
We bought a TV that I put up to permit our personnel to see the match at the time when the match is passing.
Côte d'Ivoire will play alongside DR Congo, Morocco and Togo in Group C of the Continental Soccer event here at Oyem. At Oyem Loisy, a popular nightclub, music to inspire the Sparrowhawks of Togo is blasting full volume when I arrive. Deje Toby Pierre says they are getting set to welcome football fans from across the African continent and beyond.
This event calls for serious business. Strangers come in and it gives us the privilege to sell more, to make more money. We are struggling in order that during the games we can host people here and let it be presentable everywhere. We are trying to clean the environment outside, inside, everywhere work is going on.
This other music in support for the Côte d'Ivoire team, Les Elephants or the Elephants, is played by Alain Touare, who calls himself a die-hard supporter. He brought the music from Abidjan to mobilize support for the Elephants. On the streets, discussions are mainly on the economic impacts the tournament will bring. Gabon concentrated its economy on petroleum, which accounts for 55% of government income and 80% of export revenue. The oil wells produce at least 210,000 barrels a day. Gabon co-hosted the 2012 AFCON with Equatorial Guinea, during which more than 6.6 million viewers watch the final worldwide, making it possible to capture potential tourists. Libreville, Franceville, Port-Gentil and Oyem are venues for the 16-team tournament.
Moki Kinseka reporting there from Gabon on the upcoming AFCON tournament.
U-Zone.
And in this week's U-Zone segment, where we talk about issues affecting us young people, we take you to the Central African Republic, CAR. Now, in 2013, rebels took power in the CAR in a coup d'etat. The ensuing violence left thousands of people dead, with killings between the Christian anti-Balaka and Muslim Seleka armed groups. However, stability has been restored, but there is still some animosity between Christians and Muslims. DW Zach Badoff in the capital Bangui meets a group of young hip-hop rappers who are trying to bridge the divide between their communities.
Réveillez-vous, se révolter, est-ce une solution? Faire la guerre, se contracter, est-ce une grande raison? Regarde ce monde de 10 ans à côté de ce puits de sang. C'était qu'un plan manipulé, il défend sa religion. Une guerre de religion, ça craint un bain de sang. Satan se réjouit quand il y a des morts, bande de mécréants.
The hip-hop group One Force raps about how they want peace in their homeland. Made up of 6 Central African youth, both Christian and Muslim, One Force was formed to combat violence in their war-ravaged country through music. 21-year-old Lionel Foto is the group's founder and president.
Notre pays a traversé une situation très difficile.
Our country is going through a tough crisis. You can see that people are killing each other. The houses are being destroyed. They are spoiling everything. Why don't we as youth work to stop this? It's our source of motivation to come together for peace.
C'est la source de notre motivation.
Much of the violence in Central African Republic has pitted the Muslim Seleka rebels against the anti-Balaka militia, a group comprised primarily of Christians. So, does Lionel care if someone is Muslim or Christian?
Ça me dit absolument rien.
Not at all.
Africa, Timbi. Mama Bé Africa, tes enfants te pleurent. Sous voix de tam tam, battement de ton cœur. Mama Bé Africa, t'es pourtant si belle. C'est convoité, mais les hommes sont infidèles. Ton sourire est fait de diamants et d'or.
Lionel Foto and his One Force hip hop music group are now using lyrics as a means to foster peace and reconciliation.
Pour te faire danser, je plug dans tes rêves, te hante tous ces dangers, maman, sur ta tête.
On a beaucoup.
We always heard about social cohesion. We decided, why can't we come together as artists to be an example of what that can actually be in Central African Republic?
Mohamed Saleh is one of the Muslims in One Force. He is originally from the country's north, near the border with Chad. He too grew up with music and was also traumatized by the fighting between the armed groups.
Je pourrais dire que j'avais eu beaucoup de choc.
I was really shocked. I lost 3 cousins and our house was seriously destroyed. We lost many things. I was seriously affected and I don't want this to happen again.
Ça puisse encore se reproduire.
Mama, yeah, hey, mama, yeah, hey, mama, yeah, Bé Africa, Timbi.
Bon, chez moi, je veux que la RCA puisse y avoir.
My hope for the Central African Republic is for all people to be together, united. No more war. We just need peace so we can go forward together.
Plus jamais y avoir de guerre entre nous, chrétiens et musulmans.
DW Zach Badoff reporting on a group of young hip-hop rappers who are trying to bridge the divide between their countries, their communities in the Central African Republic. And this is Africa Link on DW from Bonn in Germany.
Speaking out.
Now for some human rights reports now. Rastafarians in Ghana are raising concerns over what they call discrimination against their beliefs and practices. Some say it's affecting their children now. Some of their kids have been prevented from attending public schools because of their dreadlocks. Some schools, though, do allow dreadlocks on their premises, but only if they are neatly covered or tied together. Some Rastafarians are now challenging these restrictions in court. Isaac Kaleji in Accra has more on the report.
National Commission for Civic Education.
My name is Isaac.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I am entering the sitting room of
Ass Ward in Krabia, a Rastafarian residing in the southern part of Ghana's capital Accra. He is watching television with his three sons. All of them are sporting dreadlocks. For a long time, Nkrabia's children could not attend school because of their dreadlocks, which hung loosely. He tells me the discrimination against children with dreadlocks belonging to the Rastafarian community in Ghana is sickening.
No, they were homeschooling all this while for many reasons, you know, so they were at homeschooling. Some of the schools in Ghana, they don't tolerate it at all. And there are some that will tell you that what you have to do is to actually tie it behind them. Some will even say cover it. So the school that they are going now, they told us that all we have to do is tie it and so that it looks very neat and tie it behind, and that's what they have been doing. And so far, they have been going to school.
Ras Nkrabia says because of such strict school rules on hairstyle, his children don't feel free.
They really feel like they are restricted in a sense, because as soon as they reach home, they would just say, okay, let me take this thing from my head and feel free. So it is a little bit restricted, but because of the guidelines, they have to follow it.
Many people associate the Rastafarian movement with smoking marijuana. One of Nkrabia's sons, Nshiraba Nkrabia, says his family is constantly mocked and he has been called a smoker because of his dreadlocks.
They think that I have bad habits and they think that I smoke. I don't actually feel good when they say that. I tell them that our family, we don't smoke.
Many Rastafarian children have been expelled from high schools in different parts of the country for wearing dreadlocks. The Rastafarian Council in Ghana is now fighting the issue. A leading member of the council, Ras Kex Dan Pungu, explains what kind of advocacy is currently ongoing on this matter.
It's a very bad, you know, human rights violation, because we are in a country of freedom of worship. If the Muslim girl can wear her hijab to school, I don't see why our girls cannot also wear their dreadlocks to those schools. So right now, we really want to pursue the case in the court of human rights so that we can get these things resolved once and for all.
Ras Nkrabia and Ghana's Rastafarian movement are hoping for a relief in the coming days as they continue to fight for their fundamental human rights.
Isaac Kaleji reporting from Accra. Wanjiku, let's look at what's happening in the social media world. Tell us.
Yes, Matthew Akerson says to this report that just played on Ghana. No, not on Ghana.
Yeah, I know you can get that.
On Rastafari, that it's purely mental slavery as we know it. This is what colonization left us. John Sam says there is a code concerning how you dress to school. Well, Kabbalaman Kabbalah says they should let them come with their dreadlocks to school.
That's obviously an opinion from Kabbalaman Kabbalah there.
Yes, indeed. Now, Abu, last evening, a popular musician in Nigeria called Mr. Ezi tweeted the following: Ghana's influence on present-day Niger music cannot be overemphasized, and this has caused an uproar on social media.
Indeed, Nigerians and Ghanaians have had this ongoing rivalry, first on who has the best jollof rice, and then it's been going on forever, as I remember.
Yes, indeed, and this time it has been sparked by this one Mr. Ezi, and people are going crazy. Olaulo Rockstar says, but really, what is the Nigerian sound that you people want to kill Mr. Ezi? The Nigerian sound is any sound that is trending at the moment. Meanwhile, Bonnie Q says, President Muhammad Buhari better do something about this recession. Bitterness and vexation everywhere. Mr. Ezi is the latest victim.
It's funny how politics actually do divide us in different topics.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. And it somehow finds its way into anything. You could be talking about food and politics comes up.
It creeps in there at some point.
Certainly. Yeah. Someone else going by the name Abuja Wakaholic says, Mr. Ezi will have to do an apology song without mentioning any Ghanaian slang recorded in Nigeria for Nigerians. Meanwhile, Kobe says, I do not like Mr. Easy's music one bit, but the young man just put out a fact. Let him breathe, please. And do you listen to Nigerian music, Abu?
All the time. All the time. It's everything. You check out my playlist. Even on my playlist is full of Nigerian songs. Anyways, you go ahead.
Do you think there's any truth in what he said?
Partly. I mean, that's his opinion. I'm not going to comment on it.
Well, we have Nigerian God Echo who says, when did Ghanaians start having this level of confidence? You just hold one peaceful election and all of a sudden you have influence?
Thank you very much, Wanjiku, there. That's all we had time for. And for more stories, you can visit our website, dw.com/Africa.
Or you can keep the conversation going on our Facebook DW Africa page.
And from me, Abubakar Jalo.
And Wanjiku Mwaura.
Have a wonderful evening.